Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
Today we have an amazing speaker with us. We have Damien Bowler and he will be talking about embodied relating, listening and expressing from the essence of who you are. Damien has been teaching and facilitating groups in intersubjective and relational practices for 9 years. He has a diverse background, he has a curious mind, and is a natural teacher and facilitator. Damien, I follow your work, you know I like your work, we've had a few chats about it. So I'm really eager and looking forward to what you have to say. So I'm passing the mic over to you.
Hello, everyone. It's an interesting experience to not have the, normally when I teach online courses, I have everyone's faces in front of me and I love to sit in gallery view and I'm watching everyone at the same time. So it's a very different experience to have more of the open space. So I'm going to have to extend my imagination to whoever you may be watching. Perhaps you can extend your imagination back to me in some way. Let me feel that. So we're gonna start with a small meditation. So I'd love you to just get comfortable in some way. It doesn't have to be too formal. You don't have to go into full meditation posture, but just to be somewhat comfortable and just take. Just going to start off with like about a minute. Just maybe you can close your eyes at this point, just for this first minute, and start tuning in to the experience of yourself, like what it is to be you and how it is that you connect to yourself. Everyone has some different and unique way of what their self means and how to connect to self. So just whatever you need to do to kind of come back into that sense of contact with yourself. Maybe you need to let out a few sighs to relax. Maybe you just need to let yourself sink and settle. You might have been busy before getting here, so just letting yourself relax into that. Or maybe you're driving and listening to the replay. If so, please keep your eyes open. You can still do this even while driving. Just make sure you keep your eyes on the road. And just feel what it means to be you, how it is to be you. And this is going to be our starting point for this meditation. We're going to travel through four domains of what I call embodied listening. So this is a listening meditation. This is a meditation we use to develop our capacity as a listener and our skill and elegance as a listener. So our embodied listening. So there's three ways that you can do this exercise. The first is you can keep your eyes closed and you can conjure up an image of someone you'd like to experience greater capacity to listen to. So maybe someone that you're having a little bit of difficulty with, maybe someone that you would like to experience more intimacy with, and maybe someone you're already intimate with and like to go deeper. Whatever it is, you can take a moment to kind of conjure them up as if they're in front of you and you're going to listen to them. Another option is you can have your eyes open and focus on me, and I can be the point. I can be the person that you're listening to. And the third option, which may be more difficult, you can do this with another being in front of you. You're welcome to do this sitting with somebody, and you could listen to this recording together and sit facing each other. We're not going to be speaking in this meditation. We're just going to be practicing a particular way of orienting or holding ourselves while we listen. So we're going to move through four different embodiments or four different internal postures of listening. And these are, I call them postures, like ways of holding ourselves or attitudes or orientations or embodiments. They're just ways of holding ourselves on the inside while we're listening to another human being or another being. I mean, this can extend beyond just human relating. So once you have that, you're sitting with someone, or you have the imagery of someone conjured up in front of you, or you have your focus on me, I'm going to start with the first embodiment, which I call presence. I also refer to this as open body. So you're going to start connecting to the sensations that are arising in your body when you focus on me or this other person or this image in your mind of another person. You're going to notice that some form of sensory experience is happening inside of you. It may be tingles or pulses or waves or rushes or heat or cold. Something is happening at the level of sensation inside of your body. You're just going to notice this. And something is happening in relation to this other being. And presence is a form of stillness. It's a form of holding ourself in a way that lets go of everything else other than this moment. And this moment as the ever-arising impermanence of sensation occurring inside of our bodies. You can hold yourself really still right now. Feeling those sensations, perhaps feeling a small building of tension. Not tension inside of the body, but tension that happens when things get really still, when there's silence. A rich, deep, spacious silence. There's nothing else other than the sensations in the body and this being in front of you. Whether that's me or someone you're imagining or someone you're sitting in front of. And as you feel this sense of presence, the sense of openness in the body, take a moment to create a mental snapshot. Take a memory of what this state feels like. What does it feel like to be in this state of presence with another human being? So you can access this state anytime you want. It's always available. The beautiful thing about relational practices, we can practice at any time we're in interaction with another human. So remember this state. We're going to hold on to this state and open up. We're going to open upwards in a inclusive. So we're including presence as we open up into open heart, which is also called appreciation or acceptance. We're going to start including the emotional tone. We're going to start noticing that we're having some kind of emotional experience, some kind of feeling experience in relation to this person in front of us, whether that's in our mind or me or some real person in front of us. Some emotional experience is arising as a result of being in front of them. Just notice that and open into that emotional tone. And they may be having an emotional experience. Listening through the heart with acceptance is a way of including and being in a state of appreciation for the emotions that are arising right now, no matter what they are. And when we appreciate something, it increases in value. So when we move from this state of acceptance, appreciation, open-heartedness, we can simply be with and meet someone where they are right now. We can accept them for whatever their experience is. And this relinquishes the need to fix, placate, soothe, or do anything that interferes and subtly invalidates their experience right now. And instead, we're just simply with it. And the paradoxical thing is that this state of open acceptance is probably one of the most healing experiences for emotional distress. When someone can meet us with total openness, total acceptance, not making anything about our experience wrong. And this is a gift we can give to others simply by holding this state in our own body being, holding this state of acceptance, open-heartedness. And so take a moment to compare and contrast this to the prior state presence. Notice what presence feels like, open body, sensations. Notice how it feels different in vibration or frequency than this open-hearted acceptance, and notice how they complement each other. And take a mental snapshot of this appreciation state so you can always come back to it. Then we're going to open upwards to open mind, which I also call non-judgment. And we're going to notice that we're having some sort of mind experience. We're having a range of thoughts that are arising in response to being in front of this person, whether they're in our mind or directly in front of us, or it's me. Some kind of thoughts. Our minds are these incredible meaning-making tools. They love to make meaning. And they love to have opinions and assertions and create assumptions. It's a form of safety to do so. And yet in this moment, we can let go of all of that and enter into a state of non-judgment. What happens when we move into non-judgment? So the thoughts in our minds become more like a stream. We become non-fixated in any of them. And as a result, our natural and innate curiosity starts to emerge. We can actually become truly curious about this person in front of us and who they are and how they think. And the moment we think that we know, the moment we have a judgment, the moment we have an opinion or an assumption or an assertion, our curiosity diminishes by degrees to the level of conviction we have around those assertions. So when we relax them and open our mind, we can become truly curious about another human being. It's a beautiful, beautiful gift to give another and to ourselves. It makes relationships so much richer when we let go of thinking that we know who someone else is. Open mind, non-judgment. Take a moment and compare and contrast open mind versus open heart appreciation, down to open body presence. Notice how they're all a little different. They all work with different frequencies of the human experience, and yet they all complement each other. And take a moment to take a mental snapshot of this open mind, non-judgmental state, so that you can always return to visiting this experience, deepening this practice with anyone you encounter. Then we're going to expand upwards and outwards, perhaps beyond the confines of our bodies, into what I call open soul or spaciousness. Spaciousness is a state of realizing that there's enough space here for all of us, that your full sovereign expression of the entire unique essence of who you are does not infringe on mine. There's enough space for all of us. We can all be fully expressed. We can all live in a full experience of our own innate power. And I and you, we can hold this. We can hold this possibility for another in our listening through the sense of spaciousness. When I'm in state, I feel the back body, my body being, become very alive, like I have big giant wings behind me, become very present to the space behind me, as if my arms extend really, really wide. And I notice through holding this sense of spaciousness that another can fully show up. They can show up more and more vividly, more and more vibrantly in my presence. There is no competition between us for space. It's heaps of space. We've all got space. We can all be here. Take a moment and perhaps really feel the expansiveness of this state. What it's like to hold spaciousness for another being, to hold ourselves in a way that enables and empowers them to be more fully themselves, more fully here with us. And then take a moment, I'm going to compare and contrast the sense of spaciousness to the open mind, non-judgmental space. Compare and contrast to open heart, appreciation. Compare and contrast to open body, presence. Noticing how they're all distinct and yet complement each other. And then return to spaciousness. And take a snapshot of this, a memory, an active memory of this state, so you can return to it at any moment, in any relationship, in any connection, whenever you're with another or even for yourself. Maybe take a last breath or two here. And then on your own time, going to return out of this. And I encourage you, even though you're breaking the formality of this as a meditation practice, to maintain the connection to these four embodiments, these four states, these four inner postures. Perhaps maintain a connection for the rest of your life if you want to. They're here inside of you. And you can return to just a natural, less formal way of listening and being here. And then I'd love to just open up for just a couple of minutes for 1 to 3 shares or questions about that practice. I believe you can share that in the chat box if anyone has anything they'd like to add before I move into a presentation.
So Damien, while we're giving people a moment to share, would you encourage repeating this practice and under what circumstances?
So this is a practice you can, like, this is the first thing I do in my initial course, which I'll go into a little bit, Fundamentals of Authentic Relating. And I encourage developing this into a practice until it just becomes a natural way of being, a natural kind of sense of I'm always doing this in connection. And then it becomes a living practice, meaning that I don't have to do this formally. I can do this anytime I'm interacting with another. I can be noticing myself moving through these different domains and these different states, and I can be checking, oh, how open-minded am I? They're having an emotional experience right now with me. Am I in a state of appreciation? Can I deepen that? So it becomes a diagnostic and also becomes an ongoing practice that I can do with others. But it's also worthwhile doing this as a practice similar to, like I said, with an imagination of somebody, or with somebody if we're, you know, exploring a particular form of intimacy with another, to do so as a practice between two beings as well. Okay, I see a few beautiful comments here. Yeah, a psychedelic experience. It is, I find working in the relational fields, as I'll go into a little bit later, can bring on quite a lot of altered states of awareness in really, like, quite surprisingly and beautiful ways. I need to explore the four spaciousness. Didn't match your experience of what I would call spaciousness. And maybe this is a new area for me. Yeah, I mean, these are just my words. These are just my words of expressing particular states or embodiments. You know, I often use a lot of different words to explain the same thing, because I find that because I'm using words to describe things that are not in common vernacular, I like to point at it from lots of different directions so we can get closer and closer to it. Some of the words might not fully fit, but these are all, it's all a very personal experience, as well as I believe there is a shared experience of certain things. The way we'll experience them will be unique.
And there's also a question on the purpose of the meditation in the Q&A box.
Okay, great. So I'll field this and then we'll go into presentation. So the purpose of this meditation is to develop an expanded sense of these kind of four states as they relate to relating. And I work with these four states a lot throughout my curriculum, throughout the work that I'm doing in subjective practice, which I will going to talk about shortly. So this is the very first thing. This is the most foundational piece. And the most foundational means that everything else that I work with builds off of this. Every other form of relational practice, every other form of deepening intimacy builds off developing these four states, developing some kind of sense of embodied listening. And the reason we work through different domains is because we do have distinct and different domains. And getting really good at separating the experience, recognizing the difference between sensations arising in the body and the emotions and the thoughts is a very, very powerful practice as a meditation. I know I've been recently reading some of Shinzen Young's work, and he speaks about this in terms of an inner meditation practice as a very powerful way of kind of untangling the way experience gets intertwined with each other. John Vivekie also speaks about this in his Awakening to the Meaning Crisis lecture series on YouTube, which is amazing. It's very dense and very long, but it's also beautiful. And so this is a particular meditative practice where we become more and more nuanced with the distinctions between different phenomena arising. So this is to develop that in relationship, because we're moving it towards an inner subjective field, which is the space between us. So the purpose is, at a more basic level, the purpose is this kind of thing will just allow us to be a more generous listener, a more spacious listener, a listener in a way that actually will deepen intimacy and deepen connection. And then as we move into more esoteric places, it's these kind of embodiments that allow us to enter into kind of group fields, which is what I'm going to start presenting on a little bit now. So I'm going to share my screen and share a little presentation that I've got. I may be going through this a little bit faster than I planned on, just because there's quite a lot of content. So I hope I do a good job of articulating it well. Okay, so my work is called Evolutionary Relating, and hopefully the logo will start to make sense as we kind of work through some of this content. So I draw a lot from integral theory as presented by Ken Wilber. I kind of think of this as a meta map. This is a meta map in that it's a high order map that allows us to make sense of different aspects of reality. And then from that meta level map, we can narrow in on certain areas and create more resolution. And so that's what I'm doing, narrowing on a particular area with an understanding of how this relates to the bigger map of reality, kind of all the aspects of reality. So I'm going to kind of situate us and situate this work within a bigger map of reality very loosely and very quickly. So if we think about kind of the beginning of the universe, you know, we don't really know what occurred in the beginning of the universe, but spiritual traditions tend to suggest that the beginning is a non-dual experience, which means there's no duality. It means there's no thing. And it's not one or nothing, it's both. You know, it can't be anything. There is nothing. We can't conceive or conceptualize this idea of the nothingness that exists. You know, even this notion of nothing doesn't quite encapsulate it, because that's compared against something. So anyway, let's not worry about that too much. But at some point, duality emerges. We live in a dual universe. And so duality emerges. And I'm going to go into Ken Wilber's four quadrant model to articulate this. And so duality emerges, and the first kind of split in duality, the primary split we can think of, is between the subjective, which is the interior experience, of the universe, of phenomena, which we could think of also as consciousness, and the objective, which is the exterior phenomena, which we can think of as matter. And so we can think of the universe as primarily being created out of consciousness and matter, things that are on the inside, the witness, the thing that experiences everything, and the objective, the exterior, is that which is experienced. And so in Taoism, they say from the one became two, and from the two became many, the many. So at some point, we also have a plurality emerge. We have a plural of these. So we have the intersubjective field, which is the the feature of more than one subjective space, that there are many subjective spaces and there is a space that exists between subjective spaces. So I'll go into this a little bit more later. And then we have the interobjective, which is the way that matter relates to each other. So that the systems, the orientation of how matter interacts with each other to create kind of all kinds of amazing things like suns and planets and ecosystems and so forth. So we're going to go through these a little bit and situate ourselves with this work within this map. So another way of looking at this is through the use of pronouns. So the subjective we can think of as the I am a subjective being, and this is my subjective experience. The objective is it, my body. My body is an example of an it. It is an object. We have the intersubjective, which is the we. If we were engaged in a dialogue right now, there would be we. We are having a dialogue. We are in a conference right now. We are in a culture. We are in different nation states. We are in families. We are in some form of relationship between different subjects, different subjective experiences. And then we have the interobjective, which is the its, the relationship of different objects. Now, I'm going to go through these different four quadrants and kind of look at lines of intelligence. So one way that we can think about growth and development is through different lines of intelligence. So we develop non-linearly in a way that each line of intelligence has a particular trajectory that we develop through, but we develop through different lines of intelligence at different rates. And we need to do different practices to develop different aspects of our intelligence. And whatever we're going to practice is what we're going to develop. So we're going to have some things that are particularly well developed and some things that aren't so well developed. And we can always practice something that isn't well developed to become more developed. So if we look in a subjective field first, some of the kind of intelligences that we can develop here are like cognitive intelligence, which I think of as a bit of as a meta intelligence, our ability to kind of cognitively understand conceptual ideas. And I'm speaking from this place and to this place right now. We have mathematical intelligence, which I'm not particularly well developed in. I kind of dropped out of second year electrical engineering once they introduced the square root of -1. And I was like, whoa, too much for me. Although I'd be curious to learn a bit more about that. We have introspective, our ability to self-reflect. We have shadow, our ability to kind of understand our own shadow material. We have emotional, kind of our emotional intelligence or EQ, which is gaining in popularity and importance. We have musical intelligence. We have spiritual intelligence, which could be seen as kind of the master intelligence of all of it, but we can also look at it as an individual intelligence, kind of our relationship to the divine through our own subjective experience. We move into the objective realm. We have things like our somatic intelligence, kind of which is our ability to map and track the sensations happening in our body, which blurs a little bit over to the subjective. We kind of have our nutritional, you know, the way that we take care of our bodies. We have our kinesthetic intelligence, how we move our bodies through three-dimensional space. We have our ability to measure. We have science as an objective intelligence that we can develop. If we move into the interobjective space, we have things like our understanding of politics and complex politics of relationships in terms of laws and mandates and so forth. We have engineering as a form of intelligence, different types of engineering. We have our legal intelligence, our understanding of how law works and justice system works. We have economic intelligence, you know, our understanding of how money works through kind of our complex system. We have ecological intelligence, which is our understanding of how the ecosystem functions, how kind of the network of relationships that occurs between different organisms within an ecosystem. And so we can develop these things by putting our attention on them. And we're going to be strong in some areas and strong and not as strong in others. And then in the intersubjective space, we have things like sexual intelligence, which is, you know, which is how we're able to be attuned to another sexually and create those kind of deep union states in a sexual encounter. We have our ability to negotiate with other humans. We have our ability to teach and facilitate, which is an ability to use kind of relational spaces to do certain things. Like right now I'm in a teaching space and I'm using your attention to give you knowledge. And that's a particular way of using attention. I can develop my ability to do that. We have conflict resolution, ability to handle and manage conflict, you know, and mediation processes that occur. And then there's an intelligence in there that I call relational intelligence, which is our understanding of how relating, how the act, the verb of relating occurs, and what happens when we relate, and how we can become more masterful in the way we relate to another human being. And that's where I situate this body of work fits in this idea of this relational intelligence, which is in this lower left intersubjective quadrant. So we kind of have a situation where we are in relation to everything else. A lot of the embodiment practices, if you go to the yoga channel or something, we're going to be operating up in the upper right. Some of the other ones, we're going to be operating up in the upper left. If we're working with trauma and intimacy, we're operating in the lower left. If we're working with ecology, we're operating in the lower right. So embodiment can occur in any of these quadrants too. I have my own definition of embodiment. So relational intelligence, I think of as mastering the energy of attention, the energy of relational attention. And there are different ways we can, different qualities that develop, different capacities to develop as we do that. We get better at conversation. We get better at negotiation by doing this. We get better at leadership. Depends on this, our ability to kind of lead others and work with others. We have our ability to flirt and play in these seductive realms relies on relational intelligence. Conflict resolution relies on relational intelligence. Teaching capacity, as I mentioned. Romantic intimacy is bound by relational intelligence. We're going to be limited by how intelligent we are as to how much intimacy we can have with a romantic partner. Our ability to manage teams and work in management positions. Our ability to facilitate spaces is all going to be dependent on our kind of capacity, how relationally intelligent we are. And then also our practice of inner subjective spaces. Circling is one of the practices that I use in this field of developing relational intelligence. So we're going to go into kind of some of the basics of relational intelligence. And this is kind of where the body of work that I'm presenting starts with a course that I mentioned before called Fundamentals of Authentic Relating. And we work very specifically with three aspects, three movements of relating, and that is listening, which I'll go into in a moment, expressing, and attuning. And I'm going to go into all of these three movements of relating in a little bit of detail. So listening. So here's myself. I have myself here, and here is another. So listening is a process of receiving the other into myself, ideally the other's essence, their unique expression of self. That's what we want to develop, the capacity to evoke and receive and draw out and welcome the other person's unique essence so they become more fully realized, more fully actualized as who they are in my presence. So there's this sense of listening is something is coming, the other is coming into me in some way. And in this course, we work with three different types of listening. We work with receptive listening, which is the embodied listening practice that we just did, is a form of receptive listening. We work with reflective listening, which I've defined into six different types of reflection that we can give. And reflective listening is incredibly powerful and potent, particularly for kind of resolving and developing beyond attachment injuries and kind of the traumas and difficulties with intimacy that arise. And then also just for deepening and developing ourselves in connection with others. There's a great saying is we can't see our own eyeballs. So if we get good at reflecting and others around us get good at reflecting, we can enter into spaces that are quite transformative with each other and start growing significantly in partnerships or in friendships or in any kind of relationships. And then there's active listening, which is what I think of as curiosity, which is a kind of a more active role in how I'm engaging and drawing out the other through my own curiosity. So we go into quite a lot of detail with these things in this course. Then there's expressing. Expressing is, here is myself, here is another, and here is I am expressing myself, the essence, some kind of unique essence of myself, and I'm developing the capacity to express my own essence, my own uniqueness out into the world. And it's going to be very unique to me to be received by another. And how can I get better at expressing myself so that it is received by others, so that others are able to feel me and experience me better, even if they don't have the best developed listening capacities. We can develop our expressing to the point where it doesn't matter as much. And there are three kind of skills that we go through in expressing. This is vulnerability, which if we have time, we'll do a little bit of practice on at the end. I also call this embodied expressing. So this talk is embodied, listening, and expressing. So which of these are the two first stages in this kind of work? We also have desire. Desire is not limited to sexual desire. It's not limited to things that we want. Desire is essentially, the way that I think of it, is how we navigate through the world. It is what we desire is kind of the deepest desire I believe we have as an individual being, is to express our unique essence into the world. So tapping into our desire has us become more and more elegant at expressing ourselves into the world, at being who we want and who we need to be, is actually a function of how good we become at both vulnerability and expressing our desire, moving in the world through desire. Even the way that I'm potentially captivating your attention right now is a function of my desire, is a function of my desire to share this material. So desire is quite a deep topic to work with, and it's got nothing to do with sex, even though it can have things to do with sex. So I really want to encourage not getting caught on intimacy and desire being directly related to sexual encounters, because that's limiting, even though it heightens that. And then there's boundaries. And I would love to go into boundaries a lot, because boundaries are much more than just the ways we say no to people. Boundaries are actually how we maintain ourselves as a sovereign being, is a boundary. And we can think very briefly of a cell. A cell is a boundaried phenomena. Our body is made up of trillions of cells, and each cell has a boundary around it. And that cell modulates information and material going in and out of it. It has a semi-permeable membrane. And our boundaries are the same way. Our boundary is how we modulate experience coming in and out of us throughout our life. And intimacy is where the edge of me touches the edge of you. So intimacy actually arises through our boundaries, through exchanging self across boundaries. That may be a little bit esoteric, but we're going to head a little bit more esoteric. Then the last kind of field we work with is attuning. So attuning is, we have ourself, we have our other, and then we have this space between us. So in listening and expressing, we have this unidirectional, I'm listening to you, you're listening to me, I'm expressing to you, you're expressing to me. It's a unidirectional phenomena. Attuning, we start to enter into, we both enter into this shared space between us. And there are particular ways we can do this that are like, when you start dropping into these attuning spaces, it's very deep. It's very, very interesting. Things start to arise. We become very present. It becomes very meditative. And we can start to have some of these altered states of awareness. And there's a lot that exists in this field between us when we start to enter it. We'll talk a bit more about that soon. And so some of the skills that we develop is immediacy, which is bringing attention to what's occurring right now between us, or what I'm noticing in you right now. Impact, sharing directly the way that others are impacting us in this particular moment. And resonance. Resonance is kind of, it's a very difficult thing to describe. It kind of really has to be experienced. Resonance is when we start coming into a shared reality or a shared experience in this particular moment, where we're actually both on the same page. We're both having a close enough experience to each other that we feel like we're having one experience. And this is not a merging experience. This is not a codependent merging experience. This is a very conscious kind of way of creating shared experience, whereby we're both individual, but we're also in this collective field together. So authentic relating is a conscious application of listening, expressing, and attuning. So when we become masterful and conscious of how we listen, how we express, and how we attune, we start to enter into this thing called authentic relating. So I'm just going to touch on this particular curriculum. This is this body of work that I've kind of been developing over the last 10 years or so, and I've started to present into the world. I've just started the second course in my curriculum, which is called Introduction to Circling. The first course is Fundamentals of Authentic Relating. And then there are two streams where we work in. One is developing our capacity as a facilitator and a teacher, and the other is we actually start going into deep shared experiences with each other. So this is just a brief overview of the curriculum that I'm developing and going to be working with. I'm just going to check my time. Where am I at? Okay, I do not have that much time left. So I'll kind of wrap this up. We won't get to do the second practice, and that's okay. So let's move into the intersubjective field, which starts to occur when we move into circling and we move into these kind of intersubjective, these deeper relational intelligence spaces. So I really love kind of these really spacey imagery, as you can probably see from my background and this image. And so the intersubjective field is this really interesting phenomenon that I'm fascinated by. And I started touching, you know, around 10 years ago when I started these practices, I started touching these spaces, this field, and being like, wow, what is this? So the way that I can explain the intersubjective field is to relate it to the subjective field. So the subjective field is your own individual field. And perhaps you are a meditator and you've had deep meditative experiences and you've had this sense of like, wow, on the inside of me is this entire universe experience that exists as possible. I can go into deep meditative experiences, or I may take psychedelics, or I may do things that take me deep inside of myself. And I have this quite profound experience to realize that there's so much occurring inside of me. Now, the inner subjective field is similar, except instead of occurring inside of me, it occurs between us. Between you and I, there is a similar field that has as vast a territory. The thing about the inner subjective field, though, is you cannot go there on your own. It is intersubjective. We can only enter that field with another human being. You can meditate for your entire life and you will never touch the inner subjective field until you sit with another human being, and consciously or unconsciously, we're in some form of it all the time. You know, we're in some matrix form of it all the time, but we will never consciously enter it until we sit with another human being and do that. So it was this experience and this practice that led me to become fascinated to, I want to go deeper into this field. I want to know what's in there. And I've had profound experiences, shamanic experiences, deep altered states, incredibly healing experiences within groups of other people, with one or more. You know, the Bible references this as well. I think it's Matthew 18:20, where it is, where two or three gather in their name, there I shall be, something like that, where God will be. So there's this reference to this field exists and we can navigate it consciously and enter into it. Another aspect of this work is to develop something called turquoise consciousness. So Spiral Dynamics is a developmental framework developed by Don Beck and Christopher Cohen. And it is this developmental structure. It's Ken Wilber and Integral Theory draws on this quite heavily. And so we're moving through this developmental structure culturally. And turquoise consciousness is this possibility that exists that doesn't actually... it's not really here there. It's like 0.1% of the population. Like, it's a very small proportion of the population that exists here. However, what's interesting to me is when I started learning about this is that I started realizing that turquoise consciousness is collective. So it's holonic, meaning that it develops including all these prior stages and the benefits of all of them. And it's also a conscious collective of highly individual beings. So we become highly individualized and expressed in our essence. And within that intense individualization, like the cells in our body are highly individualized, we create a collective, a being that is more than the sum of us, a kind of a gestalt, or I like to think of as organismic. We create organismic consciousness that arises between us. So this is another way of looking at this developmental trajectory, the psychosocial DNA. And if we look at this last one, holistic organisms, synthesis orientated, which is this developmental structure that is, it is collectives. And I do believe at some point kind of politics and the way we structure our society will be a result of different forms of collective intelligences. And the internet and the possibility of this conference is starting to facilitate these orientation. So if we start bringing more consciousness into that, that possibility starts to expand further. And so kind of my last thought is the future is organismic, and there's a link to my website. So that's the presentation. Maybe we have time for one or two questions before we run out of time. And I apologize we didn't get to this other practice. Virginia, if there are any questions that we could...
Someone is interested if you have time to hear more stories of what you've experienced shamanically in the intersubjective field. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, so one quite profound time was we entered into kind of like a healing. It's like a, and it's spontaneous. It emerges as a result of the people who are in this. So one of these, we entered into, somehow we're in this group, and somehow we entered into this like healing space around kind of womb, like womb healing kind of phenomena. And there was a very distinct experience of everyone. There was probably about six of us in the circle, something like that. Everyone felt their womb. I had a womb in that. I had, like, it was very real. I had a womb. I had a yoni. I had the experience of this, the energetic structure of what it is to be woman, what it is to be pregnant. I can't remember more details than that, other than it was like very profound and very altering. I don't have a lot of like, they kind of arise in altered states and then impact me and become part of who I am. And then the details are quite hazy, almost like we would with psychedelics. But I've had many of them, particularly when I was learning this work. I was practicing with a small group of friends, and this is how I became a facilitator for like 6 or 7 years, just with a small group of friends who would kind of change different groups. And I would just practice different, entering into this field in different ways with different intentions. And through that, lots of trial and error and lots of weird and wacky spaces that we would go to, I kind of started to develop this sense of like, what is this? I want to go in here and I want to map this and I want to know how to navigate in this field. And then a realization that to do so, like, it's not just me, I need other people. You know, I can't go there on my own. We need to go in there together. So that's one of them, this kind of womb experience. I can't think of any other off the top of my head, but there've been many of them. There's been others where it's like archetypes have kind of emerged and there's like a lot of conflict space, people kind of channeling deeper archetypes and having to walk away from the circle we're in and spending like a few hours processing in different experiences. I remember one person having a very deep experience of herself as being like on a battlefield and kind of experiencing what it was like to be kind of a warrior and the kind of death she had caused and kind of going through like an experience of that. So all kinds of stuff can happen. And so the shamanic space is just one of them. It's not limited to shamanic spaces. There are other spaces. And as I mapped this more, you know, kind of through this work and through kind of practicing with others, I'll probably have a lot more vocabulary to explain these different spaces. Part of my desire is to map them. So I don't have that off the top of my head at this point.
So we're getting now a lot of feedback in the chat and in the Q&A book.
Someone mentioned Patricia Albert's work. Yes, I haven't worked with her directly, but I've listened to a lot of stuff and I like, you know, I really value, I believe there are lots of different people doing this kind of work in the world right now and exploring these spaces. And I also believe that this has been part of our practice for as long as humans have been around. I'm reading a book called Sand Talk, which is written by an Aboriginal fellow in Australia. And he speaks of the yarn as an Aboriginal practice. They call it a yarn, where they do this kind of work, you know? And so I do believe this kind of work is part of, you know, human tradition. So I just have my own approach to it, you know?
Well, just for 1 minute, all this is very fascinating, but how can we, basically, what's the point of accessing it to use, how can we use it in our relationship, would you say?
So the way that I'm trying to present this work and that I'm trying to work with is that I'm trying to embed a lot into it. And particularly, so I try to embed attachment and trauma informed theory into there so that we can use this work to actually heal our nervous systems. So one of the phrases that I kind of developed and I'm realizing is that consistent regulatory experiences heal our brain. So if we're coming into constant regulatory experiences and working in a circle space, particularly if it's well held and we're safe, we can go into very chaotic experiences too. You know, I've been in those that are like, we can actually traumatize ourselves through not approaching this work safely too. So it's not all love and light. It can be dangerous also. But if we're doing it in a very kind of intentional way and we're aware of nervous system regulation, we can actually start healing our nervous systems. And as a result, you know, when our attachment trauma is healed and our nervous system starts to regulate, our creativity starts to emerge, we become more authentically expressed, you know. And that's the big work for me of like, how do we exist in a world where we are all operating from our own unique essence, our own kind of need to be in this world. And that's where we move into things like Charles Eisenstein's work around the gift economy. We move from a gift economy because when we're expressed from our own unique self, our self is a gift to the world. We cannot help but bring our gift to the world. So this kind of work enables us to support each other in becoming more authentically expressed in our essence. Then we also develop ourselves in terms of moving towards this turquoise consciousness, which pulls the whole consciousness of the planet forward and starts to lead us towards this kind of idea of a planet that I think many of us have a sense of, where we're living in more community and tribal-based structures. We're running out of time, right? Okay, I'll wrap it up there. I noticed that. We become more attuned to people.
So I can just let you go on for ages, but I am mindful of the time. I'd like to remind everybody that we have the next talk coming up in 1 hour here on the Intimacy Channel, and it will be by Nicole Gibson on how embodying love unlocks our limitlessness. Wow, it seems like these talks are just one after the other. They just complete each other and kind of feed into each other. In the meantime, I encourage you, everyone here, to visit the coffee breaks in the portal. The links will be there for you in the chat. Nikhil, if you could paste those links up for the coffee breaks. And also join us. Join us on our Facebook group, on the Embodiment Conference Facebook group, and also on the Intimacy and Relationships Facebook group, where the discussion continues and you can watch the live streams also and engage with each other. And of course, there are 1,000 speakers, there are 10 channels, all very, very interesting. Do the kind thing for yourself. Buy the library. You can own the recordings for life. You can digest them and revisit them at your own time. And also you get the free goodies, you get the learning list, you get the notes, you get the audio only version, and you can really use them to enhance your learning experience. It's a nice gift for yourself. It's also a nice gift for others who cannot afford it. And this makes us able to put the conference out to those who can't afford it. So do visit the portal and upgrade while the conference is still going on, because the price will be going up after. All the links for that are in the chat. And so is, we'll be pasting again the link to Damien's website. Damien, I would like you to round us up with your number one embodiment tip.
So my definition of embodiment is when we take some conceptual understanding and ground it into who we are. We're embodied when this becomes who I am. So my tip for embodiment is practice. Actually, you only become embodied through practice.
Well, people are saying in the chat, thank you. And they're interested to go deeper into this work. So yeah, absolutely.
I have another set of courses starting in a few weeks. One will be in a US time zone friendly version. Another one will be in an Australia time zone friendly version. I believe both of them can be worked with Europe. And so they're not up on the website yet, but they will be probably in the next few days. And they'll be probably starting in about 5 or 6 weeks.
Okay, well, I hope I'll be catching you in some coffee breakout rooms to discuss this further. And all of you who were with us today, the chats in the coffee breaks are really where the juice is at. So do visit them. Have a look at the upgrade link in the portal there. And of course, Damien's website. Thank you so much, Damien. That was absolutely fascinating. I look forward to hearing more from you, actually.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, everyone.